We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
First couple days, it gives you a great chance to evaluate yourself and work on Duke. You don't get a chance to do that as much when you're going through the ACC season, where every couple days you're playing the next opponent and you are game planning and preparing for that team. And so we're going to take a couple days, focus on ourselves.
Zion is now back practicing. He's had contact drills, so he should be playing on Thursday. Unless something else happened, which hopefully that won't happen.
Just brings another dynamic to our team and, just makes us deeper, makes us harder to guard as a whole. And, you add him in, Zion's unbelievable with the ball. He always seems to make the right play. And, if we're all feeling good about what we're doing and just like everyone else, I think it's only going to be good for us.
What he's done for our game, what he's done for basketball as a whole, but also college basketball, there's never going to be anybody like him. Again, there's never going to be another Coach K. And the fact he's been able to do it for this long at such a high level should not be something we take for granted.
And welcome into the Duke Basketball Podcast as we get set for the ACC tournament this week for Duke. You know, you listen to a bunch of podcasts around the country. Coach, Associate Head Coach John Shire joins me as always. Sometimes they call them like emergency podcasts. We're going to call these the recurring Monday podcasts over the next few weeks.
The more consistency is good here. But emergency, I've always wanted to do one of those, after we get a big win. And, that night we should come back in at 2 in the morning.
When you get done with film.
So one of these days, let's work that in.
Well, whatever you want to call it, it's the alarm bells are ringing in terms of the postseason for Duke. I know Coach has talked about this a lot over the years, but great regular season, 26-5. But as the saying goes, everybody's 0-0 now.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly the season has gone by, at least from my perspective. And it really does reset. And there's a bunch of different seasons in this one season. You have the non-conference, then you have the conference, now you have the ACC tourney. And then the NCAA tournament. So, you have to approach it like you're 0-0 because you are. Anything can happen. Obviously, we're going there to win, and it's going to be a good challenge for us.
Coming up, we're going to talk about the matchups. We're going to talk about, obviously, the return of Zion Williamson and a few other topics around the ACC tournament. But you touched on it, Coach. I mean, there's postseason in other sports, but to me, I was trying to think about it last night. There's nothing quite like the conference tournaments in any other realm of sport because you hit the reset button this week, and then if you're fortunate enough, which Duke will be, to go on to the NCAA tournament, you hit the reset button next week again. There's nothing quite like this kind of championship right at the end of the season but before the real postseason begins.
There's not. In our tournament, whoever we play is going to be a really good NCAA tournament team, and so it's not like you're playing – a team that's not a high caliber team. Obviously, anybody we play in the teams, hopefully we can play three games in Charlotte. They're high caliber teams.
And no matter which expert you like to look at, some say eight, some say nine teams from the ACC will be in. But that means there's going to be at least five or six teams down in Charlotte that are playing for their lives. And that's a different effort, right, than you might see during the regular season because they know their back is truly up against the wall.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've been in that position before where you're playing a team and they're on the verge of making the tournament. And, you know, this is everything for them. And that can happen. You can also play a team where it's for seeding, for championships. Whoever we play in the ACC tournament, they're playing for something really important. And as are we. By the way, so are we. So we know what's at stake, and that's what makes it fun.
You obviously are a player and now a coach. Is there a time of year, I would assume it would be this or right before the NCAA tournament, when maybe you feel like you could lace them up again and get out there?
Well, you said I was a player. I still feel like I am here. I don't know if you see me at times playing pickup with
I was going to ask you about
Coach Smith.
Since we're on that, and I don't want to be too critical here because I'm the play-by-play guy, not the analyst, the transition defense at times – in those games.
Who, me?
It's a collective effort between you and Coach Smith. And like I said, that may be a strategy, though, right, to try to make sure you're ready for the next offensive set?
Well, part of the transition defense is preparing to play offense. And so I think we take turns getting ready to, you know, make a full court pass for our next shot. So I think that's where our head is at. So that's the one thing that's changed in the years. I just want to go on record here. We have about a 108-2 record this season against our managers, and just want to make that very clear.
I bet the film sessions were long after those two losses, though.
They were disappointing, I can tell you that much.
All right, let's get back to this year's team for Duke. Coming off the game against North Carolina on Saturday, another weird contest, a win for North Carolina, give them credit, 79-70, they played well. But another game where you lose a guy a couple minutes into the game, I mean, it's been weird this year in that respect.
Yeah, it's not ideal. And, you know, seeing Marquise go down, first of all, you're worried for him and want him to be okay. But, you know, I think our guys, we learned from the last time how we needed to step up in his absence. And we did that. I mean, we fought and, you know, we're up two at halftime. And, you know, really that burst in that second half, outside of that time, we really were locked in on defense. We need to get better shots. You know, that's the thing in the second half. We need to create better shots for each other, work together to make sure we get a great shot every time down. But, you know, we're right there. It's a five-point game. RJ drives to the rim, and we still can be a lot better. I mean, even without Marquise, even without Zion, we expected to win that game. And we came up short, and there are some things we have to work on. We'll do that these next few days, and we'll build.
You talk about finding things with Zion Williamson being out. We're going to talk about him in just a second. Javon Deloria and Jack White combined for 19 rebounds in the game. Javon Deloria has 8 points. I think those, I don't want to speak for you, were some of the things you guys were talking about with Zion being out. For other guys, an opportunity to step up and take advantage of some of those opportunities. I thought those two guys played really well.
They did, and we found something with not only the rebounding and their toughness and, you know, things that they're also screening on offense. They got guys open, but the rim protection. You know, Javon had 4 blocks. You know, Jack, I think they only had him down for 1 block. He had about 5 plays where he went straight up, you know, verticality to protect the rim. Whether you call it a block, whether you call it, he stopped the damn ball from going in. So that's the main thing. Am I allowed to say damn?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Okay,
yeah.
So he stopped it. And so their rim protection was huge.
Real quick on the shot blocking, 7 more on Saturday night. This team is on pace to break the Duke record in terms of block shots. It's not the biggest team that Duke has ever had here in terms of height. Did you see the shot blocking ability at the start of the season?
Well, at this level, I think catches you by surprise a little bit. But, you know, the thing we have, you know, we have really good positional size, and we've done a great job of whoever the primary defender is of not fouling. You know, I think a lot of times you have a tendency, especially as a young player, where you drive by me. By the way, you would never drive by me in your life, just so you know. But let's say you were able to drive by me a little bit instead of coming down and trying to make the play. It's trusting your help. So where now Zion's coming from the weak side, or Jack or Javon, and that's where we've done a great job of staying disciplined on doing that. So need to keep blocking shots, obviously.
All right, well, let's talk about the storyline everyone is talking about going into the ACC tournament and really has been talking about just in general the last few weeks. One, just the health of Zion Williamson, but the what he can bring coming back into the lineup. Coach has said things look awfully good for him to be back for the ACC tournament as early as Thursday. Of course, nothing is definitive, but, you know, I've been in practice. You've seen him in practice. He's looked pretty good in workouts.
Well, he's looked great. And, you know, the next step, you always have to go from non-contact to contact. And, you know, today's the day he'll practice and get some contact in practice, and I think that's a big step for him. But he's looked great, and you know, just getting his feel back, and you know, the biggest thing is getting his conditioning back. So he's been working hard. Obviously, we're excited to get him back in the mix, and today will be a big day for him.
It's probably part of the storyline that I don't think is talked about as much. You know, when Trey Jones got hurt, it was a shoulder, so because it wasn't a lower body injury, to some extent he was able to do conditioning work while he was still getting his rehab done. How big of a piece of the puzzle is that? Because obviously it was a knee that you just kind of got to get your wind back because you can't do much cardio while you're trying to recover from that.
No, it's huge. You know, it's as much as the health of your knee or health of whatever injury you would have for Zion, it's his conditioning is everything. You know, he's played a lot of minutes for us, and you know, when he comes back, you don't want it to be where, you know, he's on minute restrictions or you have to play him a certain amount. Obviously, we'll be smart and coach will sub him, but his win is the biggest thing. So he's done a really good job the last few days of building that up, starting to run up and down the court. But now he needs to do it with some change of direction. Guarding a guy through contact is a big thing.
And maybe for him, even uniquely challenging. There's a couple guys on the teams like this, but he doesn't know 85%, 80%. He only knows 100% when he gets out there. And that's one of the things you guys love about him.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so, you know, he's not going to hold back at all. And that's one of the things as he's going through this process. You know, we want to make sure he feels totally comfortable because he needs to have that mindset to go after it. If there's any hesitation or doubt at all, if he's feeling it or that it can't be that way.
I want to talk about the impact of blending him back in, but before we get to that, he's kind of part and parcel with what happened with Marquise Bolden. I know Coach said after the game against North Carolina, he didn't really see hardly any scenario where he would be able to play in the ACC tournament because of the injury. You know, just a really unfortunate situation because he had been playing well, particularly here in the latter portion of the season, the last few games in March. Just an unfortunate circumstance because, you know, I know he got called for a foul, but you look at the replay, it was a great block that he made on the play.
Yeah, it was a great block, and, you know, he didn't give up and he kept going after it. And, you know, that's one of the things, you know, coaches told him and we'll continue to relay to him just to stay positive. You know, it's a tough time of the year to get hurt where you feel like you're going to miss some of the biggest games. And so he's going to work hard, get back as quickly as possible. Again, don't think it's likely for this week at all. We told him just to stay positive.
Let's talk about the return of Zion Williamson, because I know from the fan perspective, and I get it, yeah, you know, he's, you know, the leading candidate for National Player of the Year. It's easy to think of that as a silver bullet, but from your perspective, he hasn't been playing for 3 weeks. What are some of the challenges? Obviously, we know the positives. What are some of the challenges of bringing a guy back when guys haven't been playing with him for a few weeks?
Well, we've gone through a whole season together, so I think, you know, the guys want him back and will obviously welcome him back. And I think it's adjusting to where we are at this point in the season. It's different from where he left off. And so there are some natural things we would have to do better anyway, even if he was on the team. And so I think it's more about that. Like, what do we have to do better? Here are the areas. And as a team, we have to address it. I think it's less about getting him back in the mix and to what we're already doing, because what we're doing, we need to do better, if that makes sense. So I think, especially these next few days in practice, we need to get sharp. We need to get our defensive habits back together. So that's what we'll work on.
And that dovetails into the next thing I want to talk about, because one of those guys that has emerged because he's been inserted into the starting lineup with Zion Williamson being out is Alex O'Connell. During these last five games where he's been a starter, averaging 9 points a game, there's inherently going to be less shots to be had when Zion's back out there because he is such a prolific scorer. I say that because Alex has emerged, so to speak, over the last couple of weeks. How do you keep him in the fold from a scoring perspective? Or did that really have nothing to do with Zion Williamson being out? It's just Alex stepping up, if that makes sense what I'm getting at.
Yeah, well, we talked about guys stepping up and doing more when Zion went out. And, you know, we want everyone to play the same way in terms of their aggressiveness and be who they are. Now, it'll definitely be a little bit of a different role with Zion, but Alex is a huge part of what we've done the last few games, and he needs to stay there in that role, no question about it.
And one of the guys who has really stood out, at least to me, is Cam Reddish. He's been scoring it, although he has even before Zion Williamson's injury. 23 more points on Saturday night, and you were a shooter, so I kind of was curious to get your perspective on this. For a guy who's 6'8", 218, you think about a big body and being lean, but I can see why the NBA scouts love him, because it just looks effortless the way he shoots the basketball, whether he's 3 feet away from the rim or 30 feet away from the basket. They always look like they're going in.
Yeah, and we loved his mindset to attack on Saturday night. You know, that's the thing that was exciting for us as a coaching staff. You know, obviously he hit some threes and made some shots, but the way he attacked the basket, if he does that in addition to his shooting, he'll be impossible to defend. That was really exciting. Now, the next step, now it's finishing all of those plays. And, you know, it starts with attacking and doing it and putting the ball on the floor, which is great. Now we just need to finish some more of those, and he could have a 35-point game. But that's been great to see, and need him to keep it going.
Okay, well, let's talk about the tournament as a whole. From a coach's perspective, I know you're locked into that quarterfinal and getting ready, but this is a unique week to me, different from the NCAA tournament week, because you know who your first opponent's going to be in the NCAA tournament when you're trying to get ready. You know, we're sitting here recording this on a Monday morning, and you won't know until late Wednesday night who you're going to face. You know, people can guess about higher seeds, but that comes with a lot of peril this time of year. How do you guys prepare from a scouting standpoint? Obviously, you've seen all these teams once this year.
Yeah, well, actually, the first couple of days, it gives you a great chance to evaluate yourself and work on Duke. And you don't get a chance to do that as much when you're going through the ACC season, where every couple of days you're playing the next opponent and you are game planning and preparing for that team. And so we're going to take a couple of days, focus on ourselves. And then really, it's a quick turnaround. And so whoever wins Wednesday night, it'll be a late game. You know, maybe late Wednesday night, we'll have a quick discussion with it as a team. But really, Thursday morning, you're doing all the game prep in one day. And, you know, we've been in that situation before, whether it be in Maui or other, in terms of that day game prep. But we've done it, and you need to move on very quickly. Hopefully you win Thursday night, and then you'll have to do the same thing Friday morning for whoever we play Friday night.
And the other thing that I think comes with this week, obviously when you're down there, you're going to prepare the guys like you're playing three games in 3 days. But how much of the preparation in terms of making sure their legs are fresh, because you have so many games potentially in a short span, starts here early in the week to make sure while you're working on things in practice, you make sure you don't wear those guys out?
Well, it's a fine line. You know, you need to obviously get our rest. And we've had a few guys in particular who have played a lot of minutes and, you know, carried a big load this year. RJ being one of them, you know, Trey, you know, even Cam. But, you know, we need to make sure we're rested. But then you need to make sure your wind is up and you're sharp and ready to go for Thursday night. And you can't go into it thinking you're going to play three games. Yeah, one of the things coaches always said in these tournament settings is you can't pace. You know, you can't pace. And obviously, as soon as you win, right afterwards, you need to get in the cold tubs and get your recovery. But you can't pace at all.
And everyone likes to go conspiracy theory, I feel, this time of year, thinking about teams that have won the tournament to go on to win the NCAA title, or
right,
teams that have fallen early. For those that are curious, 4 of the 5 years that Duke won the national championship, they played in the ACC title game. They won 3 of those. So those that might be thinking, you know, it's a good sign this or bad sign this, throw all that out the window. Just go win the ACC tournament, right?
Exactly. It's happened all different ways. And it doesn't mean because you win the ACC tournament, you can't win. I would actually go on the flip side. And, you know, last time, 2015, we didn't win the ACC tournament. 2010, we did. We can do it either way.
Well, as we get ready for the ACC tournament, we're going to get a 3-point shot up here in just a second and get out of here. But I wanted to relive a little bit of history, give a flavor of what Duke has done in the ACC tournament. 100 wins in the ACC tournament. Duke has played for the title 32 times, won it 20 times. Any guesses on the most points ever scored in an ACC tournament game for a Duke player?
Say J.J. Redick, 43 points.
Right guy, 35 points was the record.
Oh, wow, I'm high. That wasn't even kind of close.
Coach Krzyzewski has obviously won the title 14 times. He's won 73% of his games in the ACC tournament. Just kind of let that wash over you for a second. 62 and 23. It's insane how good he's been. And we wanted to test your history a little bit. I know that you're a millennial, like
I'm a
myself.
Historian,
yeah, you're
by
a
way.
Historian here. So we wanted to see how well you know Duke's history in terms of tournament MVPs. I didn't want to hit you way back with the 60s and get you those guys. And even, you know, Coach K's first two guys, because in the 80s, you know, You and I were just kind of getting started in this whole process, or you weren't even started yet.
I was about to get started.
Johnny Dawkins was the first one to get an MVP. That was in 86 when Duke beat Georgia Tech in Greensboro. And then in 88, Danny Ferry got the MVP when Duke beat North Carolina again in Greensboro. But there were 12 more tournament MVPs.
So why didn't you give me those two? Because I would have gotten those two, just so we're clear. help me understand.
Yeah. Did you complain to refs during games and stuff like that? The rules are the rules.
I call it more negotiating. That's negotiating. All right, that's fair.
Yeah, I know.
So there's you set the rules. All right, let us know.
There's 12 more after this, and I need to get to Chicago and try some Luminati's pizza. So we'll determine who pays for the pizza when we go have it.
Hey,
set your own line, though. There's 12. We're going to see how many tournament MVPs you can get right for Duke. What do you want to put the over-under in? It can't be any lower than 6.
I'll go 9.
I'll go nine. That's a high number. You feel good about that?
I feel confident. 9.5. How about that?
Okay, 9.5. All right, we're going to go low-hanging fruit, 1992. Duke beat North Carolina in the final, 94-74, and the tournament MVP was?
Christian Lehner.
Very well done. So, good start here. You're one for one. He's confident. He feels really good right now. I wonder if you've been looking at the sheet while we've been getting
good. I have not. I scout's honor.
Jump forward to 1999, and this really started an incredible run for Duke of winning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a row. Starting this year, 96-73 went over North Carolina in 1999, and the MVP was?
Elton Brand.
2 for 2. Man.
How about that?
I'm going to be buying some pizza here shortly. 2000, a win over Maryland, 81-68 in Charlotte.
I'm going to go with my man, Chris Carriwell. I think.
No, it's too late. You judge off my face.
I saw your face.
See, he hasn't been watching College Game Day.
That's, oh, yeah, yeah. 2000, huh?
Yeah.
I thought Sewell would have brought home the, well, he was ACC regular season MVP. I thought it would have carried over, but.
Yeah. You know, 2 for 3.
I'll take that up with him. That's on him.
Yeah, Jay Will got the tournament MVP that year. 2001. Dominant win over North Carolina, 79-53.
You see, this is tricky right here because you could go one of two ways.
Oh, he's losing confidence.
Yeah, no, it's just it's,
one
it's,
missed
this
shot.
One's tricky. You know, I end up 2000 was a big miss. I'm going to regret that one because 2001's a little tricky. You know, you have two national players of the year. You have obviously Jay Williams, but you have Shane Battier as a senior. And then in addition, you could always throw in a Dunleavy or Boozer, even though Boozer didn't play in that, so I take that back. But I'm going to go Shane Battier.
Very well done. Yeah. 3 for 4. I thought those were stall tactics for a second while you're trying to think it over.
Could have been.
But well done. Well, 2002, a 30-point win over NC State, also in Charlotte. Duke has had some success in Charlotte in the ACC tournament. I'm just throwing it out there. Who you got in 2002?
You see, again, 2002 is another tricky one because you graduate those guys. That's the team. You have J.J. Redick as a freshman, and he went off in that championship game. You said versus NC State, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I want to say J.J. must have had 20-semi points late in that game. I mean, you know, you have Duhon coming back. You know, I must say, actually, as a freshman, that's risky to go J.J. as a freshman. You see, I know I'm taking too much time.
He's grinding. No, I love it.
I'm taking too much time.
The competitive side starting to come out.
You know, like Daniel. I'm going to go, you know, I'm between Duhon and JJ. I don't feel great about it, but
well,
JJ
I'll
is a freshman.
Relieve the stress. It was Carlos Boozer, so you were wrong. So you're 3 out of 5.
Hold on. 2002?
Yep.
Yeah. What am I? Wait, hold on. I have the wrong season. JJ was 2002, 2003. That's what it was. I'm messing it up. That was my fault.
Well, now that you got your year straight, it's good because you've gotten 3 out of 5 and you have 0 mulligans left. Let's go 2000. Yeah, jump ahead to 2003. Another win over NC State, 84-77. Who you got?
So that was I had my years mixed up. That's what I was thinking, either Redick or Duhon. And again, I may be wrong again, but I'm gonna go Redick as a freshman.
Daniel Ewing.
You see, shoot, Daniel. I'm sorry, man.
I like pepperoni pizza, just so you know when we get there. So that was your third miss. But I'll give you a push if you can run the table here.
All right, let's keep going. Let's see if I can.
Three good, three not so good. But I think you feel really confident now that we've turned a corner.
Yeah, I do.
2005.
J.J. Redick.
Very good. Yeah, J.J. Redick. Yeah. Get your swagger back. You got 4 out of 7 now. 06, a 2-point win over Boston College. That was in Greensboro, and the MVP was Redick. Oh, now he's got the swagger back.
Now he got it back.
Yeah, he's got 5 out of 8. We go to 2009, a win over Florida State by 10.
If I don't get this, you should
The progression was really good. 14 in the quarterfinals. This is scoring 22 in the semis, 29 in the championship. You want to talk about building through the course of a tournament? You couldn't have staggered that any better.
You know, G, obviously one of my really good friends, he always gives me a hard time. He thinks I held the ball at the end of that Florida State game. They were fouling us. I kept going to get it and, you know, get fouled. And he thinks I should have passed it. But the thing I would tell him is I made all my free throws. So if you made all your free throws, I would pass it to you.
If Besser was on the floor, you probably would have.
If Besser, Redick, or Trajan were on the floor, I would think about passing, but not to Henderson. So Shire.
Kennard
is my answer.
Kennard was a really good free throw shooter, too. We didn't talk about him last week, but he was up there in the top five as well.
So he's above me, so I'm not fourth. I'm fifth.
Yeah, well, you're fourth. Well, there is a minimum shot attempt.
Right.
So Brennan, disrespect to Brennan. I mean, yeah. Brennan's is very good, 100%. But yeah,
I'm sure if Kennard had more free throws, he would have missed, you know, a lot more, I'm sure.
All right, back to the task at hand. I mean, you're on a roll now, but you still got to run the table. 2010, Duke beat Georgia Tech by 4 in Greensboro.
Singler was the MVP. Yeah. Singler was the MVP. I don't think I could make a shot until the final minute of that game. So, no, Singler was MVP.
This one should not be tricky. A 17-point win over North Carolina in 2011.
Nolan Smith,
People's
MVP.
Champ. Now I'm in trouble because now if you don't know 17, we're in a really tough spot. A 6-point win over Notre Dame in Brooklyn.
I do. Luke Kennard.
Very well done. You got 9.
You see, I knew it was right there. The 2002 thing screwed me up.
You knew JJ won 2 in a row, and you're chomping at the bit to get to him early.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. And I mentioned Daniel, by the way. When I originally said 2000, when you said 2002, I said Duhon, Daniel, or JJ, but it's not a good call on my part.
Before we pivot over to the three-point shot, just flashing back, I mean, that probably brings back some memories thinking about all those different things. What are some of the highlights for you of the ACC tournament?
I'll never forget winning the first ACC tournament in Atlanta when we played Florida State because that was the first benchmark for our group. We had been through a lot my freshman and sophomore year, but to win a championship was huge. And playing Florida State, who was really good. And we played well. We came out ready and actually blew it open. And we just needed to close in that game. And then the following year, I'll never forget, Coach drawing up a play for me. You know, I think I was maybe 2-for-12 in the game. And honestly, I think it was right around there. He drew up a play. We ran a lot. It's called through. And I come off a stagger screen on the baseline and hit a 3 to go up 4 with 8 seconds left. And that was probably one of the biggest shots of my career up to that point. So those are two special memories.
The other thing that's obviously special about that 2017 team is you go back all the way to the 90s when the league first went to 9 teams and then expanded further into the 2000s. That was the first team to ever do it, winning 4 games in 4 days. That was a pretty incredible run because Duke was a 5 seed that year.
Yeah, and as a coach, that was by far the most exciting to win those 4 games. And, you know, really, there's, you know, Jason Tatum to see what he did during that run, and obviously Luke Kennard, those two guys. And, you know, that team with the injuries we had that year is one of the first times we had everybody together to win back to back to back to back. It was pretty special.
And certainly looking forward to the first game of the ACC tournament for Duke. That's going to be in the quarterfinals on Thursday evening. A late tip that's going to be shortly after 9 o'clock. Talk about more of that in just a second as we get to our three-point shot. Since apparently I can't drive by you, I'm just going to have to fling from the perimeter.
You can't do that either. You can't shoot. So
oh, wow.
You're in trouble.
Guy's never seen me shoot. That's probably why he thinks I can't shoot, which is probably good logic right there. Let's get to our three topics around the game of basketball. With the focus on the ACC tournament this week, I'm stealing this question from Jay Billis, who was talking about this week, and I thought it was a very interesting topic. Wanted to get your take on it. He thought because of the imbalance in terms of some of the mid-majors and the major conferences, that conference tournaments, whether for their leagues or the power leagues, shouldn't factor into how the selection committee evaluates teams. I'm curious what your take would be on that, if you had a preference or if you've even given it a ton of thought. Should the conference tournaments where the automatic bid is up for grabs play into how a team's overall resume is viewed?
You know, I like it because it still should mean something to me. Every game you play should mean something. But, again, I'm always a guy, tell me the rules and let's go with it and see how we can win as a team. And so I understand a different perspective. I like it to mean something, but, again, that's just that's my opinion.
Yeah, and obviously the automatic bid is up for grabs and at large consideration. There's Duke is obviously in a very unique position this year. If Zion Williamson does come back, there's a chance for the committee to take a look at what Duke looks like, although pretty good sample size before that where things are pretty good with Zion Williamson. But there's certainly been a lot of conversation around that. All right, let's move to our second topic. We just talked about It's officially listed at 9, but there's going to be some time between games, so probably closer to 9:30 when Duke is going to hit the floor on Thursday. Not unusual for this Blue Devil team because of all the primetime television slots that they've been playing in, but it is a long day when you play that late. What are some of the best strategies to kill time? Obviously, you have the scouting report, everything that goes like that. I feel like being around the guys and seeing them sleep plays a large factor in that.
You try to sleep. You try to take a good 2-3 hour nap if you're a player. And that's the main thing. And, you know, I think it's always healthy and, you know, positive. If you can just get up and walk around a little bit just to see the sun, hopefully the sun's out, and walk around the block or something like that. And as a coach, I try to do that. We actually have a game day tradition as a coaching staff, and we like to get a little core workout just to get our minds ready for the night. And so we'll probably hit our core workout and get ready to go.
Yeah, we're not letting that slide. Are the yoga – how does this work? Like, I want details.
Yeah, as soon as I said, thought about trying to take it back. But you know what?
This is the insider info people come to the podcast for.
It is. And, you know, myself, Sewell and Nolan, and then Nate James, he's been a late addition to our core workouts. And we'll find a meeting room. We'll find just – we just need some space. We have a YouTube link we follow. This lady who is – killer core workouts, and we follow her, and she puts us through a good 15-20 minute workout.
This is amazing. So what's the light situation? What's the music situation?
Nolan always takes care of the music. He'll play the music. I'll put on the YouTube video, and lights are very bright.
Oh, so it's not dense.
No, it's not.
It's now,
not
like now are we going zen, or like we're going upbeat music?
No, it's upbeat. It's upbeat.
Oh, it's upbeat. Okay.
No, it's like game day. It's game day, man. We're getting ready for the game.
I'm just trying to look, I'm just asking the questions.
It's game day.
And obviously a free shout-out for her. So, I mean, that workout, those YouTube hits. If people want to – I'm just kidding. I'm going to move on. But that is amazing. You guys are pretty good at hiding that, too, because I've never seen that.
Look, if this is about you wanting to join,
no,
you can join. If this is what it's about, you're welcome to join and come get some of the core workout.
Sounds like I need to go work on my jump shot.
No, you'd be
welcome.
Or maybe
my driving. Or you feel like that's a lost cause. I should just come work on the core.
No, I just think core. I think there's still some hope for you with the core. I don't know about your jump shot.
Oh, let's go to the third topic. And this was something, you know, getting ready for the tournament. You see it every year, but I just want to quickly touch on this before we go. Duke, for those that don't know, has 13 consecutive seasons now with 10 or more ACC wins. When you look at things since the year 2000, 4 regular season ACC titles, 9 tournament titles, of course, the 3 national championships. And I give this in the context of, and this is just dumbfounding to me, Coach K has won 5 ACC Coach of the Year awards, all of them the year 2000 and previous. He actually hasn't won a National Coach of the Year award since 2001. And please don't get me wrong, this is not a comment on anyone else who's won the award. Everyone extremely deserving. But do you feel like maybe his genius, that's the only thing I can think of, is to some extent he's done it so long and at such a high level that it's taken for granted. I'm sorry, I think it's crazy that he hasn't won any sort of Coach of the Year title going on 2 decades now.
Yeah, there's no question. No question he's taken for granted. And I think it just plays a part in. I just think it's a matter of how long he's done it and how long he's been successful, which, by the way, that also is taken for granted. You know, when you go to the tournament this many years in a row and Sweet 16s, Elite Eights, Final Fours, National Championships, you can go down the line. And no question it is. I think it's something that he probably just shakes his head at this point. And, you know, we really worry about just what our team is doing. But there's no question that it's taken for granted. And he's taken for granted. And what he's done for our game, what he's done for basketball as a whole, but also college basketball, is there's never going to be anybody like him again. There's never going to be another Coach K. And the fact he's been able to do it for this long at such a high level should not be something we take for granted.
And I was struck by what you said last week in talking to Bill Raftery. I thought it was just the perfect way to put it. It's not like there's a plug-and-play system here. And I think the last few years with the nature of the game and recruiting changing of guys going to the league after 1 year, the ability to read a team, read a situation, and not be boxed in by, you know, here's what I do. No, here's what we need to do to go win, I think is maybe one of the things that makes him so special.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts. And even, you know, today as we're getting ready for our team, again, with Zion hopefully getting back in the mix, our team is different. And so we have to do different things with him getting back in it. And that's where he's at his best, figuring out how to put together a team based on our strengths, our weaknesses, and where we're at in the season.
Well, for Duke now, it's off to Charlotte for the ACC tournament. The next time we'll talk to you will be next week when the Blue Devils know where they'll be going in the NCAA tournament, who they'll be facing. It goes quickly this time of year, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, I love these emergency podcasts.
We'll have another one next week, and we'll give you an update on how the in my mind, I want to call it yoga, but how the core workouts go this week in Charlotte.
Don't call it yoga. Don't. By the way, yoga is good. You should do that too. Yoga, I've done before. I've done it with my wife. We do yoga every now and then, but you should try yoga.
I will need to work off that pizza you're going to buy me in Chicago.
Wait, real quick. What do you do on game days? How do you – so 9:30 game. What's your routine?
Well, you know I sleep till 1 to start the day. No, I like to get a workout in. That's how okay. I have a lot of prep to do to get ready for it. Not necessarily.
Oh, so you're saying
not even close
to
on the level that you guys
are doing.
No, not close to the level that you guys are doing. But I look over a lot of notes.
If you want me to go back, of course there's the game day prep. We are taking notes. We are writing what we're going to say before a game.
When I asked you what the players are doing, so I like to get a workout in, and then I like to look over some notes. But I like to get to the arena absurdly early, as you know. I get there a couple hours before you guys do, I like to be in there, get comfortable, get a feel for things. But I like the late games. I guess I still feel like I'm one of the kids. I feel like they like the primetime games too.
Yeah, anytime, as long as we're playing. Tell me what time we'll be there. You know, that's for me how it always goes.
But now I'm going to get a core workout in. That is my mission. Next week on the podcast, I will let all of you know where this happens and what's going on and vet out if it truly is upbeat music. But, like, I don't want to go too deep in this. Anyway, we'll talk to y'all next week.
Thanks.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.